Support comes from Strategic Farm Marketing, sponsor of the annual customer seminars. This virtual or in-person program will provide tools for the demands and challenges of managing a farm business in today's environment, along with updates on the latest federal and private crop insurance products and new program ECO, Enhanced Coverage Option.
This is the February 11 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Ellen Dearden of Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois, Elaine Cubb from ElaineCubb.com out of Ipswich, South Dakota, and Jackie Vakes of TotalFarmMarketing.com from Hollister, Missouri. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Let's start by getting a list of items we should likely take up for the day. Ellen Dearden from Ag Review, what's on your list this week?
Well, on the short term, I think we ought to be paying attention to the Ag Forum, which comes the end of this upcoming week. And USDA will be doling out information on the 2021 crops, spring crops, at that meeting. And it's usually some kind of interesting commentary that takes place. So I think we ought to be very aware that that's coming up.
Elaine Cubb from ElaineCubb.com.
Well, my timely topic this week is we have a new moon tonight, which means it's the Lunar New Year. And in China, that means business kind of comes to a halt for at least the next 5 days. Their futures trading is closed down. And this has implications, you know, for maybe lean hog arbitrage prices, but more so for the grain markets. I think it leads into a conversation about how much we should expect them to still be big buyers of corn specifically and soybeans also.
And Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Market.
Well, I think that we have to address the fact that they had some AFS documentation around Hong Kong and whether or not that's going to, I think that played into the market a little bit yesterday, although the markets are misleading because we've been so all over the place this week. We really haven't, beans really gained a penny so far this week. Corn is the one that lost the most today. But I think cancellations is another thing that we should talk about, export cancellations.
Let's begin, I think, with the new moon, Elaine Cupp. You mentioned that. It means China, as you also mentioned, will be off for a week. Start with the hogs for me and arbitrage. What do you mean?
Well, I think part of the reason why we've seen the lean hog market just on an incredible rally here, you know, $1.50, $2.50 today in the April contract, is because we've seen higher prices in Chinese lean hog futures, that has sort of been the guide. And Jackie mentioned the AFS. I'm not sure how much that's, you know, from a supply and demand perspective, if it's really going to be a tight problem for them for supplies. But certainly what it is a headline. And they have retail traders there the same way that we have retail traders in the United States going after GameStop. I mean, China has a big retail trading population, and I think that might be driving up some hog futures there, which in turn encourages the hog futures here. But, you know, hog futures here have also been trading higher for their own reasons, just because pork prices have been good. The dollar has been getting cheaper. The Chinese renminbi has been getting stronger. You know, there's been other fundamental reasons for hog prices to be rallying. But I think that Jackie's also right that it makes more sense, or it's more interesting perhaps to think about what this means for the row crops.
Yeah, so tell me, Jackie, about the row crops as it's related to AFS. Of course, we've heard about this from the veterinarian here on campus a couple of weeks ago that not only in Hong Kong, as you mentioned, but on mainland China, AFS is rearing its head again, this time because the vaccine, some of them, I believe they were called knockout vaccines, but that were developed really quickly and within the private sector with not much oversight, have created a mutation within the AFS virus that causes it not to be nearly so easy to not control, but to actually find, because the temperature that the hogs get disappears, and so they can't locate those hogs quickly and eliminate them from herd and those around them. So how is it that that's going to play and is playing, do you think, into soybean exports from the United States and into the grain market in general?
Well, when I think of soybean export market, I think that in general, how is the hog part of it going to play into it? Of course, there's, you know, the crush for meal is huge. There's no question about that, although they get the majority of their meal out of Argentina, not out of us. I think the bigger key is the corn market and the response that we've seen in the corn market to the demand that China has had, and that demand is basically being driven by the recovery in the hog market. Now, you know, it's concerning. Hong Kong, they destroyed 3,000 hogs. Well, that's, you know, that's not a lot of hogs compared to what they have for a herd, but at the same time, it's concerning. And so I think they're seeing the same thing there that we're seeing with COVID. You know, this is a virus. You get variants. There's no question about that. They have really improved their control situations in the new facilities that they built. And so I think in general, will it get as bad as it did the last time? I don't think so. But it, you just don't know. You know, it's a tough one. And, you know, when we're in a demand-led rally like we are right now, that's always a question you have to have in the back of your mind.
Let me pop in here with a subtlety about China buying corn, as Jackie mentioned, that actually their purchase of corn have been the big movers lately more than soybeans or soybean meal. And that is that they are also in this trade war with Australia, and they have banned imports of Australian barley. So that means from a feed grains perspective, it really does send them to corn rather than some of their usual sources.
But on the other side there, China did buy some barley out of France and bought some barley out of Canada. And I thought China and Canada were still in a trade spat, too. So I, too, noted that the tariffs that are on Australian barley would prevent that movement. But, you know, it seems to me that China is able to source feed grains from various places, and they're pretty creative about what they will feed.
Oh, there's no question about that. And, you know, when you look at the overall picture on China, you know, food preservation, that's the name of their game. And so the other side of it is, you know, Elaine, you mentioned the lower U.S. dollar. Well, the yuan has appreciated against the U.S. dollar 12% since June. And so, you know, they have a lot of buying power that they didn't have before. And so I think that, you know, in general, they'll figure out a way to get around it. And, you know, when we see these cancellations, where I mentioned earlier on exports, export sales, cancellations from unknown. Well, we believe unknown is China from years and years of experience. And it is concerning when you start to see them cancel. You know, the rules nowadays are that they can cancel it, but they have to repurchase it. But that sounds to me like they might be canceling some of the higher price purchases that they had and going for a lower price. And that's always something that we have to be concerned about.
The other thing is we're seeing China came out today and said that they had found COVID in a shipment of U.S. pork. And I think most traders don't believe that's true. However, that caught a lot of headlines, and it seems to me that's just one more way that China comes and says, well, maybe we're not going to be doing what everybody thinks we should be doing, and then they'll come back later, like Jackie said, and buy cheaper priced something, and they can buy cheaper priced new crop corn, cheaper priced new crop beans, but right now they can't buy cheaper priced hogs coming down or pork coming out into the summer months.
Yeah, and just for a point of clarification, and I did not read this story, but this would be the idea that some of the packing materials actually were carrying COVID on the materials themselves, that it's not within the meat products. And it's something we haven't heard about for quite a while now here in the U.S. as it's related to boxes and such moving around. However, the Chinese and other nations do play with anything they can if they need to stop a shipment coming in. So that's one of the ways that that can happen. You mentioned, Ellen, that next week you think we ought to pay a lot of attention to the Ag Forum and the 2021 crop numbers. Which particular figures are you waiting to watch? Is it the acreage number that you're watching for them to come out with?
Well, I think at the outset, we've got to look at the acreage number, and certainly it will not be the same acreage as it will be reported at the end of March, but it, at least it gives us a starting point for USDA thoughts. And if they come out with large acreages, which I fully expect they will, for both corn and soybean planting, it will also be interesting to see where they make cuts. Will they make cuts in spring wheat? Will they make cuts in cotton acres? And then they'll just plug in a trend line type yield, but that'll give us some starting points on the supply side of things. And supplies are right now so tight in both corn and beans that, that's worth a serious look at. And USDA will throw out some kind of crazy numbers on demand, but that shows their starting point at least.
And those of you who are interested in attending the Ag Forum, this is the first year that it's been free because it's virtual, it's online. If you go to our website at willag.org, willag.org, you'll find a link and a way to find the registration. Again, that's next Thursday and Friday, the USDA Ag Forum that takes place in Washington, D.C. Very likely that it's worth your while to at least dip in and out of some of the forum's presentations. Elaine Cubb, as it's related to acreage, about 180 million has been close to the norm for the split between corn and soybeans, total that is. Will there be 183 or 184 million? And where do those extra acres come from?
Well, that's just it, Todd. I don't think that this is going to be a year when those two crops, corn and soybeans, are going to be able to buy it away from very much else, because look at cotton prices, 86, 87 cents. That's going to, and the potential for, you know, explosive bullishness there, because China, of course, is buying cotton, and there are certainly potential supply shocks from South America for cotton. Anyway, cotton could be a bullish market, which means they're not going to be giving up acres there. Wheat, I suppose you could say, could be giving up some acres. But again, these are profitable prices to be growing wheat when cash prices are above $6 a bushel. So it's going to be difficult, I think, for the row crops to find any place else to get acres from, which is just going to continue to squeeze the supply side of these tables and keep these markets, you know, probably pretty safe from falling apart. When you have the threat of drought, when you can't really come in with explosively larger acres, I think the markets should feel pretty well supported at today's price levels.
Hold on, why do we have a threat of drought?
Yes. Yeah, out west we certainly do. Yes.
Yeah, you certainly do. I mean, there's no doubt about that when you talk to the guys in the west. There are definitely drought conditions out there. I think one of the things that, you know, you bring up a good point in terms of the profitability of all the different commodities that, and the grains that we look at. And that's something I think the market just hasn't done its job at. This price has got to go high enough to be able to stop sales. Now, where is that level? We haven't found that level yet. And I think that that's another reason that it's unlikely that we're going to fall apart, because we have to find something. You know, if you look at 119 million bushels, I think that's ironic that they came out with 119 million bushels. Of course, I'm old. I've been around a long time. And I remember the last time we were in this situation and we had 119 million bushel carryout month after month after month for a long time. And just because we don't want to be looked at as an unreliable supplier, and just because we really don't know exactly what's in the countryside sometimes. But I think that the futures market, the cash market, is doing a better job than the futures market is. I hear guys out, and you can talk to this too, Elaine, out west, that are having a hard time sourcing grain for the summer. Crushers are having a hard time sourcing grain for the summer for beans because of price. And so I think the cash market's doing a much better job than what the futures market is doing. And the futures market's going to have to kick in and work to do this. I mean, in other countries, what they do is they stop your ability to export. Well, we're not going to do that here, I don't believe. So something has to happen.
The cash market is always the true market when you think about it. I mean, when we've had situations like this before where we've got smaller crops and crops that continue to get smaller, it's always the cash market that leads.
Ellen, can you tell me a little bit about how you viewed the move on Wednesday, sharply lower, and then the recovery on Thursday of this week in the futures market?
Well, I made the comment earlier today that typically after a move like we saw with a big key reversal down in the corn and wheat, at least on Tuesday after the report, that you would have expected the following day, Wednesday, to have been an inside day. Even if it was a low range close, an inside day, we didn't see that. We saw a lower day. Mm-hmm. And so if you take today or Thursday's action as a reversal up, a hook reversal up, all we are is back into the range that we set on Tuesday and Wednesday. I think it was a neutral day on Thursday. I didn't think it was extremely bullish. If we had closed right on day's highs, I would have been a lot more confident in saying that we've got a low made. You know, we did test the 20-day moving averages, broke through those, closed under those yesterday on Wednesday, and then on Thursday came back and closed above them. So I'm a little bit more ambivalent on corn than I am on beans. I thought beans recovered nicely. And I think Jackie pointed out earlier that if we were to close the week out on Thursday afternoon, we would be higher on beans for the week. We'd be lower on corn for the week. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we'd be higher on beans. That's almost, you know, crazy to think of.
It's just a statement to how much these markets are moving, you know, and how I think range trading is probably what we're headed for, you know, until Ag Form will probably bring us some information, or at least, you know, provide some trade information. But I think until we get a little bit further down the road here, there's so many conflicting things going on down in South America right now. In Argentina, the farmers are talking about going on strike because of the fact that, you know, they have a 33% export tax on beans and 12% export tax on corn and wheat. And now they're talking about raising the corn and wheat export taxes. And so, you know, there's that type of thing could propel us higher again. But, you know, you saw when the trucker strike in Argentina ended the other day, it just deflated corn. And so this market is just so up and down. And people tend to get very emotionally involved, and they look at a down day like yesterday and want to throw in the towel. You just can't do that. You have to look at the whole picture.
There's an interesting implication to this volatility when you've got double-digit days up or down every day during this particular time frame, during February, when the reference prices are being set for crop insurance. Mm-hmm. Actually, not just the reference prices, but the premiums themselves are set according to what the volatility is during a five-day period at the end of February. And I have to hat tip here to George Vandevoort at Bank Iowa's crop insurance that pointed this out to me, is that premium prices themselves are probably going to be higher this year than most years because we do have this more volatility than we've been seeing in recent Februaries.
Yeah, the crop insurance price, of course, being set this month, and the premiums based on the higher price for corn. You can find more on the FarmDoc Daily website, including information about the volatility and how it plays in. Actually, it plays a huge role into the premium price for both ECO and crop insurance. And ECO stands for Enhanced Crop Insurance. FarmDocDaily.illinois.edu. Look for webinar/IFAS, and then in the archive, you'll find a series on that. In fact, today I moderated the crop insurance webinar, and there is in the closing market report from Thursday a portion of it with Gary Schnitke talking about that volatility rating again. It's from the last five trading days of the month of February, as Elaine alluded to. Elaine, I wanted to come back to one other item as it's related to corn, because we haven't really talked about the WASDE figures very much. The trade clearly had to be disappointed that USDA did not move the needle very much on ending stocks, meaning they didn't really add very many exports. I wonder what you think of that for corn, given the number of exports that have gone to China in some really big, actually super big export days. And what that means going forward, does it mean, do you think that USDA has it right? And is that problematic when we get to next week and the Ag Forum looks at 2021 and says, hey, we've got a big acre and a big yield potentially coming?
Yeah, it was 2 million metric tons sold on announced on January 29th. So that is a very big corn sale. I don't know if USDA economists are looking forward and not expecting to see this pace sustained when we get into the spring, and South American crops are also coming onto the world market. I don't know what the justification behind that is, but you're right that the WASDE report did technically offer a bullish change to ending stocks. It was technically a bullish report. I mean, but the market reacted with disappointment. And I wonder if that's just more of the timing scenario that now that we've had that one big opportunity monthly WASDE report to see tighter ending stocks, and farmers, actual farmer selling, commercial selling activity came in after that just because of the timing of it. You know, you got as much of a bullish opportunity as you could. That was passed, and now it's just time to lock in some prices. And so I think that might have been some of the volume and the activity that we saw in the selling right after that report was actual farmer selling.
Well, and I think too, when you look at the bigger picture, you know, the day before when they came out and announced that China's corn stocks were going to be down so much more than anybody thought, it was unrealistic to think that the USDA was going to make any big changes on, you know, on their report off of just one report like that. And yet we traded like wild based on that. So I think when the numbers came out and you didn't see any change in the crop size for China there too, there was a lot of disappointment. But I don't disagree with you. I think that farmers were at a point where, you know, it's about time we do something. There's no question.
And just to add into this, Ellen, the CONAB, which is the counterpart to USDA, NAS in Brazil, on Thursday morning released its updated figures. This time around, it did include the second crop for the first time, corn, or the safrinha corn, and it now says total supply, including some 39 million bushels of imports, will be about 4.6 million bushel there on a 4.153 billion bushel crop in total. That's up from the previous year by about 115 million or something like that bushels. So this is a pretty good size crop. And I'm wondering if we begin to start to pile on where we're at the top of the market, and what more bullish news do we have when bearish news continues to come in?
Well, and not only did CONAB come in and up their crop, but we saw Argentina's crop increase slightly by the Rosario Grain Exchange. You know, we just are seeing some improved weather in South America that kind of inch these crops up. I thought the commentary with the CONAB report on the safrinha corn crop was interesting, that just recent rains have really helped the crop. Well, it seems to me that recent rains are coming ahead of a lot of that crop being planted. So maybe it's just more wishful thinking. But I think we are seeing, you know, we've been talking about record crop in Brazil because of the increased plantings, and now the numbers are starting to, the projected crop size are starting to reflect those as well.
And Elaine, this wasn't something that we didn't know was coming, because they had more acres of soybeans in the first crop. It was pretty clear, especially out of their largest production area, that they would be planting the second crop to corn, and there would be more acres of corn coming, though it's all later than it should be. And that'll play probably sometime in May, I suppose.
Yeah, I was going to mention the timing of it. Everything is about 2 weeks off this year. And that's true even here in the near term, where we're not going to be until the end of February that you really start to see that first crop hitting the world markets.
Well, I think, too, when you Dr. Cordonier said, when you look at the number of ships that are sitting down in Brazil waiting to load, it would imply that they would be shipping about 11 million metric tons in the month of February. Well, last year they had enough ships for 8.5 million metric tons. They weren't late planting, and they still only shipped 4.8 million metric tons. And so the likelihood of them being able to ship even 4 million metric tons during February is probably not realistic, you know. And so even though the ships are sitting there, and he said the bulk of the ships are for China that are sitting and waiting. But we were down there in 2006, and it hasn't changed since then. If it rains, which, you know, they've been getting rains on and off, they can't load out ships. They have to shut everything down. They've got to close the holds on the ships, and they have no covered out loadouts. And so they've got a lot of things to deal with. And I think that just, you know, we've talked a lot about it being 2 weeks behind. I think it's actually closer to 3 weeks behind is what it's beginning to look like as we move forward and actually start to look at some of the harvest that's going on.
Another thing we have to think about, too, is that we've got excess ocean freight. So the ships waiting, even though they are seeing demurrage, there's ships that are in excess of needed capacity right now. So I think that will play itself out. But the thing is, too, if we're sending a lot of ships to China, are they going to be able to have turnaround time, too? Aren't those ships going to be waiting to unload? So I think we've got the situation on both ends of the deal.
Yeah, I agree. You know, can I take a step back to the acreage, Todd? Is that all right?
Sure.
We talked yesterday about how, on Wednesday, about how IHS Market came out and said that they thought corn and soybeans were going to be at 184.3 million acres, which you talked about how 180.3 was the record that was set back in 2017. We did a little bit of work on that, and I want to kind of point out the soybean situation because that's where we have the tightest numbers. If we were to plant 89 million acres of soybeans and have a 50.6 yield, based on yesterday's WASDE report, it would give us a carryout of 78 million bushels. So if we get to 90 million at 50.6, it'd be 128 million bushels. And I think that, you know, now that's based on where we are right at this point in time. And, you know, we talked a little bit about, you ask about the export situation. And, you know, the USDA, even though we're 85% ahead of last year when it comes to export inspections on corn, they're only projecting 43% ahead. So I don't anticipate they're going to make any great big moves on carryout just at this point in time yet, or on changing, you know, the export situation at this point in time. But I think that that's amazing. So if you look at 184 million and we go up to 90 million, you know, on beans and 94 million on corn, let's say, that still doesn't give us a lot of breathing room. And so I think that there's plenty to be said for the fight for acres and what it's going to take to be able to get enough acres to bring beans back around and hope like crazy we have a great year so that we can actually build back some stocks.
I'd like to know what each of you think about new crop sales for corn and soybeans. You can talk about old crop if you want, but prices are high, and I assume producers could make their own decisions as to what they have left and whether they're willing to market it at at a profit at this point or not. And Elaine, why don't I start with you?
Yeah, so we've talked about all the reasons why I think each of us probably believes that these prices here are well supported. And for that reason, you know, anytime a farmer has been asking me lately if they should be doing option strategies or locking in prices, I've been suggesting that they can afford to wait here until February. But there is some risk here when you start to see the South American crop eventually, sometime, maybe in March, coming onto the market. So if a person wanted to lock in some prices, I think here late February into March would be an appropriate time to do it. However, it also depends on your geography. I would be more willing to be locking in significant portions of next year's sales if I was in the Eastern Corn Belt, where you have some moisture stocked up in your soil, versus here in the Western Corn Belt, where you literally do not know what your yields might be next year.
Well, then Elaine, jumping in on that comment, yes, I am a willing seller at current price levels of a portion of this crop, but I think you've got to use futures. We've got relatively wide basis for new crop sales, so I see no reason to lock in a flat cash price at this stage of the game. But, you know, we've got December corn in this 450 range and November beans at 1175. I think most fellows can tell you that these are profitable levels if they can produce a crop. But like Elaine, I'm much more hesitant once you get west of I-35.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. And I think, you know, we've been making moves forward on locking in bushels that have to be taken to town, or, you know, that they don't have any storage for. That's something that we've worked, and we had 460 as a initial goal to start to make some sales. Well, we made 465 and a half, and we're just kind of bouncing around. But I think you're right when it comes to the basis being what it is. So, you know, it's either you either do a futures or a futures only contract, and let that basis kind of perhaps tighten as we move closer, you know, as old crop goes off the board and we get closer to the new crop and we know more about what's going on. But this is a tough one. You know, you talk to guys and they say, no, I haven't done anything. I'm waiting. I think it's going to get a lot higher than this, you know, and we've all lived through that, I think, philosophy, you know, and we've seen that philosophy go from, I think it's going to get a lot higher to, well, it's 50 cents lower than what it was, and now I guess it's never going to go higher. And so I think rewarding something like this is an absolute must.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. I'll start with Elaine Cub from ElaineCub.com out of Ipswich, South Dakota.
Well, happy Lunar New Year. 2021 is the year of the ox. So if that's bullish, that's a little metaphor for you.
Helen Dearden from Ag Review in Morton, Illinois.
The market volatility has been absolutely wild. And I think that has a lot of people just being paralyzed by this market, saying, I'll watch it one more day, or I'll watch it in one more week or whatever. And at some point in time, you'll run out of time. So don't let yourself just do nothing. Continue to watch the market and continue to watch basis.
And Jackie Vakes from TotalFarmMarketing.com.
Well, I think we need to keep in the back of our minds that when it comes to the corn, we've surged 48% in the last 5 months. And the last time we saw anything like this and these current levels, even though you heard all three of us say we think we still have more room to go higher, corn prices sank 28% over the next 4.5 months from when we hit that high. And so be prepared, and please try and stay safe in these horribly cold weather times that we're having right now.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can hear the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Ellen Dearden from Ag Review, Elaine Cub of ElaineCub.com, and Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.